yours. The world is yours.
Smartest mind, smartest mind, whose world is this? Smartest mind, smartest mind, whose world is this?
The world is yours. The world is yours.
Smartest mind, smartest mind.
I sip the dumb peak, watching Gandhi till I'm charged and writing in my book of rhymes. All the words past the margin. The whole of mic, I'm throbbing. Mechanical movement, understandable smooth.
Good afternoon, evening, and nighttime. This is Neil Coulong, the managing editor of Behind the Steel Curtain. Joining me for today's exciting and always interesting broadcast of The Standard is The Standard is Lance Williams of Steel Curtain Radio. We are recording this on Tuesday evening, March 4th, the day Steelers outside linebacker Jason Worlds has accepted his transition tender, meaning he will be a Pittsburgh Steeler, barring a trade or some type of bizarre accident, before the 2014 season. Lance, we're going to get into that, and we're going to get into a whole lot more here. Our first podcast here in several weeks. It's been a while. There's been a lot that's changed in the world, right? We got a lot of snow out in certain parts of the world, and people like you don't have to deal with that at all.
And I am very grateful for it. People like you are quite crazy to continue to live in that mess. But yes, it's been a long time since we've talked, listeners. Happy 2014 to everybody out there. Hopefully you guys brought it in safely. And Neil is absolutely right. There is a ton of stuff to talk about in regards to the Pittsburgh Steelers in this new calendar year.
Which is exactly why we started off with the always entertaining segue of the weather. Screw the weather, Lance. We're celebrating 17 degrees here. On the inside, though, it's 70 degrees and warm, and we're going to talk Steelers football here on The Standard is The Standard. Let's dive right into the topic of the day. Jason Worlds, outside linebacker, formerly a bust, then a decent player, then a guy who could compete with Jarvis Jones, then Jarvis Jones' backup, then right tackle killer of the second half of the season, turned Steelers defensive MVP, 8-sack guy, new hero, get rid of Lamar Woodley. Has there been a player on the Steelers roster over the last couple of years that's had more up and down than Jason Worlds?
There's only one other player that I can think of who's had that sort of tumultuous relationship and up and down, topsy-turvy type nature with the Pittsburgh Steelers, and that's the mercurial one himself, Max Starks, who ironically also got the transition tag. That's a player that went up, went down, went sideways, was loved by Steeler Nation, not liked by management, sort of not liked by the coaching staff, both on the same accord, transition tag, cut them, bring them back. That's the only player that I can think that sort of had the same type of experience as Jason Worlds in the recent past.
You don't get a whole lot of players that get cut, paid for that, cut or signed again to make what was essentially a double dip payment like the Steelers did with Max Starks in 2011. And in many ways, Lance, my thought, I'm glad you brought Starks up. That was on my to-do list here. My issue with Starks, not him as a player, but kind of what he represented, that post-lockout season with the Steelers, right at pretty much the same time Lamar Woodley got his large deal that's causing, I guess you could say, you know, figurative pain for the franchise right now. The indecision on Max Starks, in my mind, really was the catalyst for what seems to be, I don't want to say a divided house in Pittsburgh, but some interesting free agent moves, interesting decisions on who to keep, who to get rid of, who they're giving extensions to, who they're not giving extensions to. What happened over that lockout? Do you think there was something, you know, that the front office not being around the players somehow scrambled their brains into thinking that something else was going on? Starks got transitioned earlier in his career, but he was cut during the offseason, only to be brought back after 4 weeks and turn out to be the team's best lineman. Every other decision the team has made since then has been questionable at best. What is with this franchise since 2011, and how does that pertain to Jason Worlds and his six games of success in 2013 becoming one of the highest paid defensive players on the team?
I think when you look at the situation, I think if you even take it back even further, I think after the two Super Bowls, and I think after the Pittsburgh Steelers saw that Ben Roethlisberger indeed was a franchise quarterback and a guy that they wanted to build their team around for the foreseeable future, I think you sort of got a shift in the philosophy in terms of how they value players and how they retain free agents, meaning they started to double dip on older guys. Because when you have a franchise quarterback, you never want to be in rebuilding mode because it's so difficult to identify those guys and get one. So you're always in a mode of, we may want to pay an older guy a little bit more to keep him on the roster so we can always stay in go mode. So I think they got sort of caught in that, because prior to that, you know, it was very difficult for Steelers to get three contracts. Many guys didn't get three contracts. 30 years of age was sort of that Mendoza line where you didn't get a third contract. But then that sort of shift, as I described with Ben. But I think you're right. I think the Max Starks deal, the transition tag, there was a disconnect there. But I think the thing that we never know, being on the outside looking in, is the relationship, the interpersonal relationship between player and coaching staff and front office. Because I think what you're describing can also be illustrated in the case of Willie Colon, where you had an oft-injured guy that got multiple deals, or a deal and an extension, you know, resulting in a dead money that's on the cap right now. So, you know, I don't know if management was too close to some guys or had a bad relationship with some guys, and there was a disconnect between the value of the player, the relationship of maybe management with the player. I mean, I don't know. It just seemed all really murky and, to your point, not very clear.
Willie Colon is an interesting name to bring up, especially alongside Lamar Woodley. For all the talk among the Steelers right now that their future direction, so much of it is based in the idea, like you brought up, that they signed all these guys, these older players, and they kept them around and so on and so forth. If you look back on it, which contracts were really bad at the time? Colon is probably the worst one that you're going to mention. In many ways, Woodley probably can't be considered to be too far behind that either. At the same time, Woodley had all the leverage in the world. Speaking of tags, Woodley got the franchise tag. That's the big money tag. At that point, they wanted to keep him, but they wanted compensation if he wasn't going to be, if he was going to look into free agency, which Jason Worlds will not do. Woodley didn't do right before training camp or during training camp of 2011. He signed a long-term deal, I believe 6 years, $61.5 million, with $22 or $23 million guaranteed. And I don't remember exactly what it was, but we were celebrating at the time. We signed the younger player to a long-term deal. We signed Willie Colon, who was not an old player, to a long-term deal. Troy Polamalu got a long-term deal when he was younger. As fans, do we just forget that these guys age during the back half of the contract? Or is the issue here that we expected them to stay for 3 years and then go because they've got their 2.0 version waiting in the wings? Is that the part of this team that's gone? Not so much that the older players were that, you know, get up and go spirit, like you mentioned. They're guys that, you know, plug and play. The issue to me is the fact they didn't draft replacements, so they didn't have a choice but to keep them. Am I wrong in that?
I don't think you're wrong, but in dissecting and looking at some of the deals a little more closely, I think when you look at Heath Miller and you look at Troy Polamalu, I think a good gauge for fans to always look at when you're looking at a guy's contract is to look at the franchise tag number and just look at the player, look at his production, and look at the franchise tag number. When you look at a Troy Polamalu, and I had said this previously, I mean, you can't pay a safety that much over the franchise tag. You can't pay a Heath Miller that's not giving you Gronkowski production that much over the franchise tag. And when you look at a Lamar Woodley's contract, I think the error in the contract is the base salary amounts at the end of the deal. So, like, when you look at his deal in 2014, I mean, you know, a base salary of $8 million. I mean, that's prodigious for a linebacker, even if he is giving you the type of production that you want, because you paid him the big signing bonus, which is going to push out his cap number, of course, into, you know, $12, $14 million. So, you know, it might just be how the contracts were constructed, not necessarily the thought itself of giving Lamar Woodley a long-term deal, which at the time was a very good move in every Steeler fan's opinion.
Well, here's the thing with that. And the high base salary in the later years, it gets misunderstood as almost like a player position type of thing. You could see it as that, but all that really does, it's an indication to both sides that at this point, we want to come back and talk about it. Now, it doesn't directly say that, obviously, but it's really hard to have a non-quarterback at a $13.9 million cap number, whatever it is that Woodley has, the bulk of that being in his base salary. What that means is, by this point, we're going to want to talk to you about your contract again. And in Woodley's case, I think he has perhaps a little bit more leverage than was initially intended, because they restructured his deal, converted some of that money into the signing bonus, and tacked current cap dollars into future years. Now, with Woodley, you look at him when he was productive, before the soft tissue injuries continue to happen for him. He got after the quarterback. He made plays. He was an outstanding player. You didn't have any issue with that. The only reason I bring this up now, Lance, is because if the team is looking for cap space, cap, you know, relief to some degree, I'm thinking Antonio Brown's a good guy that you want to talk to. Why? Because he's 27 years old. He's coming off a 110 catch season. He's not going anywhere. But is that the kind of risk the Steelers feel is worth it in the long run, considering the same exact thing that happened with Woodley, it happened with Roethlisberger, Lawrence, Timmons, these guys that have larger than average cap numbers, certainly over the franchise tag. I won't even get into it to Heath Miller, considering he's got a 9.5 cap number, and Jimmy Graham of the New Orleans Saints is going to get $7 million with the franchise tag this year. You can see how that's out of whack. But the restructures of the younger players, the guys that everyone wants to keep around, the only way to do that and continue to field a competitive roster when you have guys that make a lot of money is to restructure them and to apply more money into the future, which is basically to say this guy is going to continue to be a part of our organization. Everybody wants to sign the younger guys. They don't want the older guys. At what point do we think that this is not a fluid process? You're going to get into this all the time until you have younger guys that can replace the older guys. This is all about the draft. It's not even about the salary cap. If you don't draft young, cheap guys, you have cap problems, period. It has nothing to do with what deals you're giving anybody.
Yeah, you can definitely run into it. But the one thing I've noticed in the deals nowadays is basically all of the deals for anybody coming up are basically two-year deals. There are two-year deals, and the third year stands as an option year deal with the big base salary, and they'll figure it out then. Sort of like what Philadelphia is going to be dealing with DeSean Jackson. Most of the guarantees will be in the first 2 years of the deal, and then they're going to come back to the table in year three, and you're not even going to get to the back half of the deal, the last 2 years of the deal, because all the deals are going to be 5 years. But you're absolutely right. If you have cheap, younger guys that can produce, then you're not worried about this. But I think we're both saying is, I think the transition tag of Jason Worlds means that Lamar Woodley is presumably not going to be a Pittsburgh Steeler in the future.
I think that's a safe bet. And back to my previous point, will the cycle repeat itself again? You have the same issue with Jason Worlds that you had previously with Lamar Woodley. You're concerned about depth behind him. He's the backup. He's going to push a starter out of the lineup. So who's going to replace him? This is a franchise that got away with a highway robbery in undrafted free agents. You got James Harrison. You got Willie Parker. These are high production, low immediate cost players who developed into superstars of the league that had a lot of production when they weren't making any money. We don't have any of those guys anymore. It's hard to get those guys, but to me, the only reason that you're having a conversation with Lamar Woodley, the only reason that he's even around, is because you haven't developed anybody outside of Jason Worlds. And to whatever extent Jason Worlds has even produced is questionable. He had 8 sacks last year. Do you know who he got those against? Michael Orr, Mitchell Schwartz, some guy in Detroit that nobody's ever heard of before. He had huge games against nothing. Now, are we really so desperate for sacks in Steeler Nation now that we're looking at what Jason Worlds is doing and saying, yeah, you have to give him a long-term deal? Absolutely, you have to. What did he do through week 10 last season that made you think this guy is in line to be second behind Brian Arakpo as the primary pass rushing outside linebacker in free agency this year? What did we see in those 6 games that makes us completely ignore the first 3 seasons and 10 games that he played? What is it, Lance? I need help with that.
I mean, it's circumstance. And it's funny that you say that, because when he signed a tag, it immediately made me go, well, let me rewatch it, because my immediate thought, I should say, is he had an okay season. I didn't think he was dominant whatsoever. It's just a case of, where the player has some leverage. Like you said, there isn't a backup. And the current starter is off injured with a huge tag number. And if you add on to the fact of that, they lost Lewis last year, who was an emerging player as well. So it was sort of a case where everything sort of just worked out for Jason Worlds in this situation. And he did play better in the back half of the year. So it doesn't often happen that way for players, but it did happen for Jason Worlds in this case, and he was able to take advantage of it. Now, I'm not of the mindset that they should sign him necessarily to a long-term contract. I'm of the mindset they should just pay him the 9.75 or whatever the exact number is for the year and see if he's not a one-year wonder. And if he is, then, he robbed the system and got $9 million this year, almost $10 million, and good for him.
We're going to take a quick break here on The Standard is the Standard. I'm Neil Coulong. He's Lance Williams. We'll be right back.
World is yours. The world is yours.
I sip the dumb peace, watching Gandhi till I'm charged and writing in my book of rhymes. All the words past the margin. The whole of mic, I'm throbbing. Mechanical movement, understandable smoke.
And we're back. I'm Neil Coulong with Behind the Steel Curtain. He's Lance Williams of Steel Curtain Radio. You are listening to The Standard is the Standard. Lance and I went out and got a cup of coffee here quick, discussing things during the break. And after Lance decided that he couldn't edit my 3-minute long tirade about, what was I even talking about, Keenan Lewis this time? We decided we'll probably revisit that topic in the show. But for now, we're talking transition tags and depth charts and pass rushing outside linebackers and terrible AFC North right tackles. It's been a lot, Lance. This is an action-packed show. I don't think anybody can deny that. I want to get back into Jason Worlds just because of the amount of conversation I know I've seen on Behind the Steel Curtain talking about him, talking about Lamar Woodley, the glory days of the Steelers pass rush. I don't think it's unfair to say are well past them right now. They had 32 sacks last year, and they're rewarding one of their players. They had 32 sacks last year, and they're debating cutting a guy who's on the hook for a salary cap number of $13.9 million. At what point, Lance, do the Steelers need to say, as Joe Starkey said in his column today, enough's enough? If this is a winning team, we're okay with putting dead money on future caps for the sake of – or excuse me, not dead money – restructured money, increased salary, increased signing bonuses to keep guys who are a part of a winning team. Is Woodley's departure here pretty much imminent for no reason other than the fact that he just makes way too much money and we're tired of dealing with it? It's time to move on? Or is this really let's clear room for Jarvis Jones?
I think it's both. I mean, I think his waving is imminent. I don't think it behooves him if you're going to make $8 million base salary. I mean, I don't know what number would be comfortable for him to let them take him down to. I mean, even if they took him down $4 million, I mean, his cap number would still be $9.5 million. So I think it's going to be difficult to get Lamar Woodley's number somewhere where he's amenable to. I mean, you can't take the guy down to $1 million and cut $7 million off his base salary. So I just don't think there is probably a number that they're going to necessarily agree on. And as we all know, we're all football fans. We watch this. You know, you draft the first round guy, you want to see the guy play. You know, hopefully the guy can play. You do want to see him play. So I think the whole issue about the actual football part of it is the conversation is Woodley versus Worlds. I don't even think it involves Jarvis Jones. I think Jarvis Jones is probably pegged in as that guy that's going to start next year. So I just don't see Woodley in the plans moving forward.
You know, that's exactly my problem with all of this, Lance. Jarvis Jones has nothing to do with the conversation. Let's flip Jason World's season around with Jarvis Jones's last year. We're having a completely different conversation about the same thing. Jarvis Jones is the next Joey Porter in Pittsburgh. Jarvis Jones is the hero. Everybody loves Jarvis Jones. Give him whatever he wants. Jason World, yeah, we'll bring you back to replace Woodley. We're getting rid of Woodley because he makes way too much money. Worlds can do just fine on you know, the defensive left side. We'll keep him there. Jones is our guy. You know, Jones is the guy that we want out there. Isn't that the conversation we kind of should be having? And doesn't that speak to the larger problem that the team has? It, again, we are talking about keeping on high-priced veterans because younger guys who don't make as much aren't producing. And let me follow that, Lance, by saying, you know what's worse than a rookie first-round pick not playing? One who plays like Jarvis Jones did last year.
Worlds showed that he was the best of the three, right? Because Woodley did not de facto because he was hurt. I mean, when he was in, he played well, but he was hurt most of the time, so you can't even count it, basically. Jones didn't develop as fast as they would like, but he's still a rookie. So, you know, it is what it is. Probably the most affordable and best two are Worlds and Jarvis Jones. I mean, that's just where it is. And until they bring in depth like you suggest, that's probably the best hand that they have. Now, I don't think there's any way in the world they can keep Woodley and put Woodley and Worlds out there and invest that much money into the outside linebacker position. So it goes back to your earlier point. Until you have guys, you got to do the best with what you have. And the best that they have probably is Worlds and Jones, which might be, you know, which could be the problem in and of itself.
8-18 for a reason, Lance. They're a bunch of guys. Jason Worlds, I wish him the best. I hope it works out, but too many holes, not enough draft picks. That's really what this comes down to. They're not going to make any moves in free agency, which is obvious. We knew that, and they're going to spend premium money on a player that has proved more that he's not capable of being an every down, every day guy than he has.
Well, let's look at it this way. If you don't tag Worlds, he hits the open market and you don't have him. Your only option then is to draft a guy, because we all assume that they're not going to go out into free agency and be able to bring back a guy that can impact the defense like an Arakpo, so to speak. So you don't transition tag Worlds. He's gone. He gets to free agency. Somebody overpays for him. He's gone. So your only other option there is to redo Woodley. But Woodley doesn't stay healthy. Woodley gets hurt, then you may have Chris Carter playing it. I mean, they're not in a good position. I mean, they did it to themselves by not finding cheaper replacements. But I don't know if you could put yourself in a position to have Jarvis Jones and Chris Carter playing your outside linebackers and depend on Lamar Woodley.
That's exactly it. They're one Jason World injury away, which was not exactly a rare thing throughout his career, from that exact scenario. We're beating a dead horse. I think everybody will want an opportunity to weigh in on that whole issue. But to me, I really think it, in many ways, this is over before it began. And what we're talking about right now, it really, it, as far as Lamar Woodley's salary cap or salary cap number or leaving, we're throwing deck chairs off the Titanic here. There are a lot of other issues that they're going to need to address. This is a team that's getting worse in its pass rush, despite the fact that salary cap number at the position, its height of draft picks at the position is increasing more and more every year. They're struggling to get to the quarterback more and more each season. And I think everybody is accountable.
But here's the thing we have to keep into account. There hasn't been a down of football played. There is a possibility. I don't know what that percentage is. I don't know how likely it is. But there is a possibility that Jarvis Jones could be the guy that they think, and Jason Worlds could be that guy as well. I mean, that's the part of it where, as fans, we have to wait and see. There's that element to it. Right now, in March, early March, late February, we just don't know. I mean, theoretically, I mean, I don't think Worlds and Jarvis Jones, I mean, it doesn't excite me, but it could. They could develop into more than just guys. We just have to wait to see how it plays out.
Yep, and certainly that will be the big talker heading into training camp. But until then, and this is the great thing about the off season, is you have kind of these monthly birthdays, if you will, the continuous flood of information and speculation that goes on. It is a website hack like myself's ultimate dream, and it is the accountant's tax season coming up in the NFL draft as well as NFL free agency. Free agency is going to kick off next Tuesday, 4 p.m. Eastern time, in which time, between now and then, the Steelers will look to get at least a few of their guys signed, if at all possible. To do that, though, they're going to need to make a few moves about that whole salary cap thing. We've talked about Woodley. Let's get into some of the others. Keith Miller, right now, it sounds as if he is working out some type of extension on top of the restructure that was reported that he took yesterday. In other words, he had a base salary of $6 million and a deferred signing bonus of $3.5 million, giving him a salary cap number of 9.5. He accepted the reduction for the sake, I think, of making sure that they could tag Worlds while they had the opportunity. And in exchange for that, they're continuing talks about an extension. Now, whether that'll actually happen, I suppose we'll find out sooner rather than later here, but Miller's the guy that you want to keep around. Troy Polamalu, I think, has to stay around simply because they don't have two safeties that they can sign. They would be losing two starters from the previous season anyway. You've got Will Allen headed for free agency right now. You've got Polamalu in a deal that it seems to be pretty much set up to renegotiate this season, this offseason. 10.8 and change salary cap number that he has with an $8.5 million roster salary. So that said, what moves are you making at safety, Lance? Let's just assume the Miller extension is coming. What do you want to do with the safety position?
I think with Troy being his last year, I think they're just going to do a new deal, and the proration from this year will count to the new deal, and they'll extend Troy out. I mean, we still see the Troy Polamalu, especially late in the year. I mean, he made some tremendous plays. When Troy is active, you know, Troy still is the catalyst, I think, on that defense to help them get turnovers when they do get turnovers. So I expect Troy will be there. The owner came out strong in the offseason about wanting Troy to be a Steeler for life for what it's worth. So I think Troy will be there. I think they're going to dip their toe in a free agency and go out and get a free safety a la the same way they did with Ryan Clark. I think they're going to continue to kick the tires. They did it with Delmas. And so I think they're going to continue to kick the tires and do that. If they don't, we talked about it off air. The move, I think, is to bring back Will Allen. I don't think they're going to trust a young player to play that free safety position with Troy. And plus, I think Shamarco was probably more of a strong safety type anyway, although they put him in the slot and had him cover wide receivers. The Miller aspect to it, I mean, absolutely. I think Miller is going to be a guy. They're going to take that six million base and bring that down. And I think, like we said earlier, they're also going to dip into the bank of Antonio Brown as well as Lawrence Timmons. But I think they also might go ahead and cut Larry Foote And I think they're going to make Ike Taylor take a reduction. If he doesn't, they'll cut Ike Taylor and get a $7 million cap loss or cap or a relief to their cap in the tune of $7 million. And if you couple that with Levi Brown, they could pretty much deal with their cap issues because they stand at about $15 million over now that they have to count the Jason Worlds transition tag.
And we can probably expect some type of long-term extension coming from World to drop his cap number down as well. That said, you've got moves that you need to make in the secondary, Lance. And before we close her down here, let's get into a cursory overview of the draft. I don't draft positions. I draft players. If I'm in charge, I want a player first. A man first, really, then a player. A position comes after that. What I mean really is it's got to be the right guy. And from there, I'll worry about position. To me, though, judging by from what I've seen of the talent that's in this draft, and it's a good one, certainly in the top 20 or so, the Steelers, assuming they will draft in the top 20, they're going to get a very good football player in that pick. I know that's the cliche that everybody says. This is a good draft, though. They can get a good cornerback, I think, at 15. I'm not sure the safeties that are there are going to be worth the 15th overall pick. But I can't get past the secondary in this draft. What are your thoughts with the number 15 pick in this?
I'm thinking corner as well. And we look at it in a different way. We look at it like completely opposite. I don't watch college football, and I don't apologize per se for not watching college football. I watch the Cal Bears because I'm a Cal alum, and I don't even know if you can consider that college football as they got absolutely destroyed last year. So I'll say I agree. And so let's do it this way. Let me give you the position and you give me the player. We are of like mind. I think cornerback is an absolute need. So I'm going to say cornerback and you give me the player.
The player I think at 15?
Yes, a corner.
It will obviously depend on who's there, but I think Justin Gilbert is the best corner in that draft, and I think Darquezzi Denard is a solid player. He's a good player, and he would fit the system. Between the two, I would take Gilbert, a lot more physical upside. I think Denard probably will be better his rookie year, but Gilbert will probably be better overall. I would prefer Gilbert. Justin Gilbert, I think, is certainly worth the 15th overall pick in the draft. In fact, I think he's probably worth the 10th pick in the draft. So if I were to bet right now, I think cornerback is the best position you need, and I think Denard will be the corner who's on the board at 15. And in many ways, I think he's going to be the Steelers guy. I'm saying that now in March 4th before free agency. So take it for what it's worth. I would say probably 60% right now he's their guy. Plenty of draft talk, Lance. Plenty of time coming up before the NFL draft in May. We've got free agency starting next week, and there'll be plenty of pro day activity for the college prospects before then. I think we got to do this again. Let's get another one scheduled for next week. What do you think?
Absolutely, my friend.
Until next week, then, I'm Neil Coulong, managing editor of Behind the Steel Curtain. He is Lance Williams of Steel Curtain Radio. This is The Standard is The Standard. We'll be back next week. Thanks for listening.
It's yours. Whose world is this?
The world is yours. The world is yours.
It's mine. Whose world is this? It's yours. It's mine. Whose world is this?
The world is yours. The world is yours.
It's mine.
I sip the dumb peak, watching Gandhi till I'm charged and writing in my book of rhymes. All the words past the margin. The whole of mic, I'm throbbing. Mechanical movement, understandable smoke.